Dad Bod Rap Pod. We're a nerdy podcast. We own it.
A guy on SoundCloud, I think it was today, said we're the smartest hip-hop podcast.
Whoa.
Oh.
I don't know if that's true. It's probably not, but it's very nice to hear.
Absolutely.
Does now, that mean he's the dumbest? I was kidding. Just kidding. No. Just kidding. Shout out to anyone who cares.
What he meant is that Sotero's not doing his show anymore.
I know.
So we almost by default just move into that slot.
I'll take the Sotero default, man.
Yeah.
Shout out to Sean Sotero.
Totally.
Killing it.
It's really nice to hear that. I don't know if it's true, but I'll take it.
We're the most smart assed. That's that I can definitely claim that. My name is Damone Carter, aka Dim One. I am joined by Nate LeBlanc and David Ma. We like rap. We like words. And at the end of the day, rap is just it's fucking words, right?
Words over drums.
Yep. Words over drums.
In some cases, there's no words and no drums. So.
Yeah, I was about to say, in 2019, it's
to be
words over
than
soul
us
loop.
To figure out what that means. Yeah.
So there is, there is a section of the internet that's really been around for a long time. I remember encountering this on my first forays into the internet while I was not supposed to be doing it when I worked at the bank. And this is like circa 99.
Is that a real story?
Yeah.
You had a screen where you could access the internet?
Yeah, it was
and if
wild.
If someone needed like fives, you're like, hold on, I'm in the middle of an argument.
Kind of.
Yeah.
In 99? Damn.
In 99, dude.
You're
in
like,
99,
I can't
2000.
Help you. Someone is wrong online.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm on OK Player. Excuse
totally,
me.
Totally. Totally. On a message board getting crazy. Yeah.
Hey, can I get some quarters? OK Player.
Yeah. that was me. So I was remembering this as we were talking about this segment that we're going to do right now, encountering people on message boards that were battle rapping via the typed word, which is called
Keystyling.
Oh my God.
Top five keystylers go.
Oh,
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I was so. I remember
Rap
coming.
Dude 420.
I know. Oh, totally. Man.
Slim Shady 74. Was, no.
Just got back from Scribble Jamma.
Dude, it was that. It was that.
No,
era.
Totally. That
it
era.
Was that era, and folks were going back and forth with these type things. And I remember being appalled. Like, ugh.
You're like, I'm a nerd, but this is just
beyond the
well,
pale.
Well, I never.
Like, you're not even rapping the words.
You don't want to hear them rap those
totally,
words.
Totally.
No, you totally don't. And I'm like, this shit ain't even in bar, I bet, if we try to sync it up. But there is definitely a part of the hip-hop nerd intelligentsia that really, really values the written word, the text of the rap, which is something
sure
that the book of human language.
I'm here for AC Alone jokes all day.
He's one of the rappers, and that album in particular does stand up to like the scrutiny of reading it.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's well.
Right.
It's well written enough. Mm-hmm. Like 100%. So. There's a class of rapper whose lyrics are all about the delivery.
Yep.
Yes.
You know
yep.
what I mean? Like yes. Last week's episode, we talked a lot about Bushwick Bill. I'm not trying to read Bushwick Bill lyrics.
Right. No,
right.
They don't necessarily jump off the paper. Or even like an old
face, we could talk.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It's right. literary right. almost. And right. some
Willie
cats,
D, I'll take in any form, written, oral.
Yes.
Know.
And now we open up to Ball-Headed Hoes. No. There's certain rappers that are for sure literary, right? And there you could see, you know, it would jump off the page. And some guys
of
are
course.
More delivery. Read a ODB verse and, you know.
And a Black Thought
you're
verse.
You're not really
yeah.
getting,
yeah.
like, what
you're
the
not
point
getting literary
is
references.
From that.
You're yeah, getting it, grunts.
Yeah.
But
yeah. It was, yeah. There was a big
both
like,
are equally awesome.
Twitter yeah. thread a couple of weeks ago, so in Twitter language a couple of years ago,
right.
about how do people spell Pusha T's ad lib. And there were like hundreds yeah. of responses, and they were all the same. I think you need to have a CH or a GH in there somewhere yeah. to capture that guttural
of course.
End thing. So I'm like a Y-E-U-U-U-U-C-H,
okay.
maybe.
Okay.
Something like that. Okay. I don't know.
Okay.
But if you read a Pusha verse, you'd have
he,
to put
but
that
he
in there a couple
in and
times.
He corrected it, right?
He has his way he spells it.
Yeah.
Does he?
But that doesn't yeah. necessarily mean that's how you have to spell it.
That's
you know
really?
I mean?
That's
like,
true.
Here's a question, and I know Dave's answer because we talk about this a lot. How do you spell hip-hop?
Oh,
two,
shit.
Two H's?
Yeah, I go two H's, capitalized dash.
Capitalize the first H or both?
I capitalize both.
Okay. I capitalize the first H if it's at the beginning of a sentence, but not if it's in the middle of a sentence. So only as like...
Agreed.
Yeah, and use the dash.
I feel a key style battle coming up for hip hop, for the soul
for the
of hip hop.
Hip hop as a written word.
I'm hitting the space ball hard. Space ball hard. Enter, 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 enter.
All up in your face, Ma, with the space bar.
I'm in my FaceTime. So.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's something particularly, I think there's something unrappy about focusing too hard on the word on the page, and I'll tell you why, is because I feel like, especially in 2019, I'm not sure if a guy like Matt Kami, for instance, right, even to read his shit written down, you wouldn't get it. Like, we're more about delivery now than we ever have been.
Well, with Mark especially, I feel like, you know, if he's gonna be all super precise and be minimal, then off a page, it better be mind-blowing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think it would be. There's a lot of references to Haitian history and stuff like that that I would actually like to take.
I don't know if he's the perfect
take the time to explore that more, but like, I'm not paying like $1,000 for mixtapes or whatever, so I've never gotten the full bundle of what you get when you order a product from him. But are the lyrics part of it?
Oh, I don't know.
I kind of doubt it.
Right.
Yeah, that's like kind of a throw-in thing. Like, Dave and I are partners in a small label, and some of our artists want to include the lyrics, and mm-hmm. I'm all about that. Like, you guys know I'm a nerd. Like, I'm all about – I would love to read the lyrics if it's important enough for you to put them.
100%.
Like Bob Dylan didn't always include the lyrics, but there's always like a written – piece to like his records.
Right.
You can read the record jacket.
It's writerly. I mean,
exactly. Yeah, I think most particularly of the kind of like, I don't know what you call it, poem, essay, piece of writing that's on Blood on the Tracks. Like, I've read that hundreds of times.
Totally.
Like, sitting there staring at the record. Like,
100%.
And like, when things were more physical, you got more of that.
Well, Public Enemy, and this is my introduction to lyrics on page, was they used to include the full lyrics within.
See, I mean,
it, within,
did it include Flava Flav's parts?
Yeah. Yeah.
How many E's on boy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because,
like, yeah, boy.
Yeah. Chuck rapping at 122 BPM, like, you kind of couldn't really catch all the content if you didn't.
Right.
If you, so their cassette sleeves, you used to be able to open up.
Well, that's an example of some shit I want to read.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? And you would read along, and it would deepen your understanding.
Oh, 100%.
Of what was happening there. I feel like we're moving further away from that. Perhaps my Matt Kami example may not be the best, but I say that because what makes him amazing, when I hear him being amazing, I go, you deliver that in such a way that is so unique and could never. I almost feel like you can't write that. I know on my own journey as an MC, there's certain shit I wrote and I'm like, I forgot how I said
that. There's emphasis on delivery, and with him, sort of lack of delivery and choice of negative space. But I love lyrics. I love reading lyrics. Sometimes one word the wrong way, one word the right way will change its entire meaning.
Totally.
So it's meaningful to me.
But what we're encountering now is the wiki sizing of rapper lyrics, and of course I'm talking about Rap Genius.
Yep.
The site, a little bit controversial in
the
sense,
not quite aptly named.
No.
Website, which they started as a rap lyric repository, and then they rebranded as just Genius because they wanted to like annotate the whole world or whatever.
Exactly.
Which, like, very few things need to be annotated.
Yeah.
And there have been so many like infuriating moments where I just completely disagree with what will come by many to be seen as the definitive take on the meaning of lyrics that are important to me.
Totally.
I'm like, no, it's not.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And
so
there's kind of like famous things like Jimi Hendrix supposedly saying, like, excuse me while I kiss this guy, you know, instead of kiss the sky, where it's misheard lyric.
And
when you bought Are You Experienced or whatever, you'd look and you're like, oh, it's kiss the sky. Like,
I
know he's not gay.
No. Right.
But it's with rap, there's so many intricacies.
Of course.
And like,
and slang and mis-
only the artist could understand some of it. So it's cool, like Dave was saying off air, when the artist comes in and says what things mean. But I also find that to not be especially helpful. Like, the example I'll use is Jay-Z's book Decoded.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's like a coffee table book for aunties.
Right,
basically.
Right.
Like, if you need Jay-Z to explain what he meant, you don't listen
to
enough
Jay-Z
rap. Like,
exactly.
His
exactly,
shit's
yeah.
not complicated.
Right.
It's like, I keep the heat on the the counter like a microwave. Like,
okay, got you.
It's like, yeah, we know.
Got you.
Right.
That
right.
means gun. Yeah. You know, yeah. it's like
I pack heat like the oven door.
Yeah.
My aunt gets that.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I check cheddar like a food inspector. Right, it's not like it doesn't. It's not. It's a single entendre.
Right.
It's not. It's like it's clever, but like.
There's not the depth where you really need to unpack
it. I'm not like learning shit about life and exploring my soul with Jay-Z lyrics, but they're great lyrics. Yeah. But he took the time and he grew to be so famous to have a fan base that does not speak hip hop.
So he has to translate.
Right.
And so
he had
to translate it. I found the book to be very unhelpful. I found it to be poorly designed and frankly over designed. Yeah. And it looks like a shoe advertisement.
I have one of those books. I got it as a present.
Yeah, for sure.
From obviously not a rap head.
Yeah,
gave that to me.
Oh, you don't understand lyrics, Dave. Yeah. You could use this.
You
book.
Like the rapping.
No. So,
it's faulty in the annotations, and I could also see where. Sometimes I find that people will put meaning into things that are actually just fly talk.
Right.
Yes.
Like you're trying to infer meaning into something where I'm like, no, I think he was just getting to the next bar.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think he was really, that meant all the things you think it means. Right.
And frankly, you just don't know. Like, who are you to say? Sure. And this is the problem with the wiki model.
But isn't that just context of internet in general? You know, you take it with a grain of salt.
It's difficult, and I know that your old Droog actually took his shit off.
Droog?
No, it's actually Dave's old Droog.
The
royal. So he took his shit off, right?
Yes. He has a little moment on the new record where he kind of talks shit about Genius, and then kind of maybe perhaps in retaliation to that or I don't know who started what, or maybe he asked them to. He took his lyrics off of Genius. And the reason I saw that is because someone whose English is not their first language reached out to him on Twitter and was like, hey, man, why'd you take your shit off Rap Genius? Like, I don't speak English as your first language, and I'm really trying to understand it. And all he'd put was the sunglasses wearing kind of like smirk emoji. Yeah. And I was like, if that's what he wants, that's great.
Poor Balki Bartokomus reached out.
I know.
Well, I mean, like, behind the scenes, there was a bit of a sea change. I think Rap Genius started off with, like, really noble, a really noble desire to, like, do the right thing. The person behind it was Andre Torres from Wax Poetics.
Okay.
So then, you know, when he was at the helm, I think that's when it started to grow.
Okay.
And something happened where he left. And it seems like interns took over.
Dude, they hired Sasha Frer Jones away from The New Yorker.
I know. Right.
Like, get those checks. Totally. But you left, like, the best job in the world to, like, work for this, like, freaking startup website. Like, I don't remember if he ever actually published anything or who knows? That seemed to not work out for him.
Here's my 20-page annotation of DaBaby.
Right.
Baby on baby.
Totally.
So I'm not going to say I don't use it. I do find it to be helpful. But it's more like one source you consider. Like, I don't know if you guys are like recipe followers or not. I am not. When I cook, if I want to cook a dish, I'll look up the top four or five recipes on the internet
and get an idea,
synthesize the things that I want from it, and then kind of freestyle it on my own.
You know what
right?
I That's like exactly to do what I is do. I like to read the long ass story before the recipe. That's my. I'm like, how did you come up with the tuna casserole?
You read the Julia Child's bio before.
Yeah.
I'm not against that, and I'm not against that as
neither,
like a style of writing. And it would be hard for me to publish a recipe without the personal essay, because I tend to speak in the form of a personal essay in general. But
like, grilled cheese has always meant something special to me.
I remember when my mom grilled some cheese.
Yeah.
That's what we need on Rap Genius, is we need like long
grilled cheese annotations.
Yeah. I need Doom
Mom's
to be like
recipe.
After my fourth blunt, I said, you know what? Goody Goo Goo. And Looney Cuckoo. That's the Rap Genius I'll pay for. Yeah, I'll pay. I'll subscribe.
See all of Doom's annotations?
Yes. I'll subscribe off top. Yeah.
So we know from like interviewing some rappers, and no offense to many great rappers that we have interviewed, sometimes they're not the most articulate about speaking about their own work.
Sure.
Like there's
sure.
there's ways to draw kind of you can't just ask them, what does this mean?
Right.
Like,
right.
It just means what I said and shit is a very common answer.
Right.
And it's like they some of them are not super self-reflective about it. And oftentimes you don't want to over-explain.
Right. I've had a lot of experience.
It is what
it
is.
Right. It is what it is.
It's what I said, and it's the way I said it, and it had to do with the beat and the tempo and a lot of different choices went into this. It's not an essay, and it doesn't I don't want to unpack is the term we would use in cultural studies.
Yeah.
Every nook and cranny of every letter I wrote.
Well, because sometimes it's just not there. Like, I think the average rap nerd, what they don't want to know or understand is, like, a lot of times you're getting to the next bar.
It rhymed.
And it sounded dope. And even, you know, even if you said it wrong or whatever, you know, there's... But then there are folks, you know, I remember somebody was asking the artist formerly known as Milo. He's Rap Ferreira, R.A.P. Ferreira now.
I believe that is
Case, somebody was asking him kind of that kind of question. Like, some of this shit is just mumbo jumbo. Right. And he's like, no. He's like, all this shit has meaning.
I don't think his is. But someday we're going to talk to him because he wants to talk to us someday. And we're very flattered by that. But I'd like to get into that. I feel like you could have that conversation.
Oh,
he's a thoughtful person.
Right, right. Sometimes rappers don't want to explain themselves.
Though. Totally. You know what I mean? Do you really want to know what Ghost meant by nutmeg?
Totally.
Or do you just want nutmeg
so
to wash
seasoning
over
the broth.
Exactly.
When you, no.
Well, you know, and sometimes when you put out art, it's no longer yours.
Yes.
It's the world's. So it can be chipped at in how many ways that it can be. And don't get mad when you get asked about it. Is my other thing. I'm all over the map with this.
For sure. You must have had some kind of contentious
rapper angst. Yeah.
Conversations about this, right?
Totally. With many, many people. And, you know, Ghostface is one of them where, like, I'll ask him some shit, and it's like, his answer is totally not worthy. But then, but then he'll go off on a tangent, and it's brilliantly colorful.
Right.
So it's... Right. You know what you're getting with.
They're not
artists.
Giving you that kind of annotation on demand.
Right.
I don't know. That was high as shit. I don't know.
Right. Totally.
In our... I think we've probably referenced this way longer or more than the interview actually lasted, but when in our last interview with Crime Apple, Dave asked him what he's reading, and he's like, I don't know, World Star captions? I think about that at least once a week.
Yeah.
It's almost been a year since that happened, and I think about that all the time.
That's
I'm like,
hilarious.
How can you be such a brilliant rapper if you don't read? But I don't know if he's fucking with us.
Right.
Being completely sincere.
Right.
Used to read, doesn't fucking read. I have no clue.
Right.
And honestly, it's way better. He said a funny line and moved on
exactly,
with his life.
Exactly. Yeah.
And like, so this,
like, what
not
do you
to make the show too
grand.
Self-referential, but the worst thing about this for us was when we interviewed Chris Crack, who is I would go so far as to say, does not think about his art. He just does.
Mm-hmm,
and he does what he does, I find very compelling. And we try to take our nerd overthinking ethos and ask him things about the way we were thinking about it, and he was basically like in between bites,
like I'm eating a hot
just
dog,
going like
right
that's not what that is, nope,
totally, well,
nope.
That, well
I just do that shit.
That's the disconnect with the listener and the artist, and that works to the listener's advantage and the artist's advantage too.
Interesting.
Yeah,
so it's like it can mean nothing, but to us it's brilliant.
Well, because there's a
or
mystery.
Vice versa.
There's mystery there, right? Like everything is not like completely spelled out for you. Which is a little bit weird for rap because rap is the most literal musical form. Like you want, if you want to
roll or literate,
literal. Like you want money. We're talking about money. I'm literally just gonna be like, I get money.
Right.
I'm not gonna dress it up.
A soul song would say like, I'm searching for the whatever, and a rapper's just like, fuck that. I want some money.
I want money.
Yes.
It's one of those things where when you can find an MC again, like a Milo. I would love to if De La would annotate their shit.
Oh my god,
that
Pots
would be
news for days. I'll read
a book.
Right.
I fell in love with this fish who got caught in my mesh, but Yoshi burned the scene
up like
David
Koresh.
It's like I have an idea of what that means, and I don't really care what he thinks it means.
Right.
Point.
Okay.
I've lived with it for 25 years.
It's yours
I think
now.
It's fly as fuck.
Yeah.
Right. And so I don't really need to know, but I would read it if there was an article.
100%.
You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Man. How
so
yeah.
An interesting kind of sidebar to this is like who owns the lyrics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so part of I think the genius controversy and early internet kind of like cease and desist culture kind of controversies are like, is it okay to just post the lyrics without, is it the same as posting the song on YouTube or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you, should you even post other people's art?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole Creative Commons kind of conversation
right,
to be had over
right.
here. If you're not if you're not profiting, who cares? Like, art is free to the world. But I think there are many artists who don't feel that way. They might not like the font.
Right.
How you got me in Comic Sans, motherfucker? My shit is way more John Blaze than that.
Totally. That was my diary in Comic Sans, dog. Yeah.
An interesting thing happened to me when I was writing a big profile of a rapper. We had a kind of correspondence around it, and he ended up writing me, like, it's kind of like lyrics, but it's kind of like a poem. And I've always wanted to, like, put it up in the house somewhere, and it's really special to me and, like, really important to me. But, like, I don't know how to properly format it. It was, like, kind of like an email. So it's, like, sometimes emails fuck up the line breaks. And I'm such a nerd, I don't want to get it wrong. So I've just kind of not done the thing of, like, I'm like, dude, what do you go get some fancy paper? Like, your wedding invitations? Like, how does one...
Yeah.
Who, you know, I'm not, like, a graphic design person. It's not, like, the language I speak. But, like,
what's the right presentation?
What's
for
the right presentation for this? And I want to get it right. So I'm, you know, it's been
to
like it's over a year now, and it's like no one's ever done that for me. Like, that was really, really cool. So
totally.
I want to, like, have it up and look at it and think. You don't go back and reread old emails that much.
Totally,
you know what I mean?
Totally,
it's like
totally.
I want it to be art in my house and, like, a part of my, like, journey as, like, a writer and a person who
100%.
You know, it's like delves into the depths of the art with people. It's like a memento of that process, and him and I clicked. It was really cool talking to him. Like, so anyway, that's some lyrics I don't know what to do with, and what I'm not gonna do is ask him what it means. Just to bring it back to this conversation.
Well, it comes back to the notion of ownership, right? Who fucking owns your words and how you want them to be seen. Yeah. And are they your words?
Right.
Once they're out.
Once you deliver them.
Because, to return to what you said, like, once it's out in the world, is it
it's
yours
no longer
anymore,
yours,
or is it just, like, part of the ether?
Right.
You know?
You paint a painting and people can fucking, a million people
they
can have a million
They can think what they want. Right. They can, here's what it is. Our interpretations of the art are ours. To your point about De La, it almost doesn't matter if they came back and said, no, this was about X
this
or
about
Y.
Bullshit.
Because this is how I've experienced it. But if we want to get technical, the words and how they're constructed are there.
It is everything. Like, I know.
Their property.
I think it's different as, like, for I'm not an aspiring rapper, right?
So
anymore. I take things in as a fan.
Right.
We do this podcast, and I've been thinking about this a lot based on the interview we had with Vic Spencer. When you guys hear this, it will have been 3 shows ago or 3 weeks ago, where he kind of made me think a second time about how the podcast is an act of performative fandom.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't phrase it like this. He said some things about his direct-to-fan album model, and I really would stress that you guys go back and listen to it. I thought he said what he said about
profound.
Why he does
Brilliant.
That
profound.
It was profound.
Yep.
And I kind of wasn't expecting it from him, and it was fucking dope that he, like, had this, like, so see, that he had thought so much about it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought was really, really cool, and I've been thinking about what he said a lot. And so I want to be the right kind of fan, right?
No.
Like, so we are a part of, a very small part, but a part of the promotional apparatus.
Sure.
Like, last week we had Derringer on because he's got a new record, and
it's cool to catch people
on their press cycle because they're doing a lot of interviews and they're thinking about their work. And, like, but we've also done things where we, like, reached for people who are not at a place in their
mm-hmm,
career where
mm-hmm.
they're doing a lot of interviews, and sometimes you get unexpected results out of that. But I also don't consider what we do to strictly be journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not here to document so much, like,
sure,
the
you,
sure.
you can tell by the number of
sure.
errors we make. That
right,
this is,
right.
So yeah. At the end of the day, and obviously Dave's a real writer who has real bylines, and Damone is a real artist who's got real records, but I'm just a fan. So my fandom needs to be kind of like a supporting mechanism that, like, I can help interpret and define artists' work for people who may not have thought about it in the way that we did. And so where does this fall in the spectrum of, like, interpreting lyrics?
Right.
You can ask them, and if they don't give you a good answer, you can kind of move on with your life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't be a dickhead fan. Like, there's a lot of those, that video of those, like, entitled white boys trying to film Earl, and he smacks the phone out of their hand.
Brilliant.
I don't want to
be favorite,
like,
Earl record.
Yes.
Totally. I don't want to be, like, the podcast version of that. I'm not going to do some gotcha questions,
no.
I'm not going to be disrespectful. I appreciate when people give us their time, but I'm also not going to, like, try to. I will ask about interpretations of specific lyrics at times, and even with production, like sound and stuff. Like, I think of our Kenny Siegel album, or interview about Hiding Places. I'm kind of wanted him to tell me, like, there's this weird guitar tone on the album. What does it mean? Mm-hmm. And he did. Mm-hmm. And that's fucking amazing. Yeah, yeah, like, that's why I do this. I get to ask the question and get the answer, 100%. But I'm not going to, like, not sleep at night.
Of course, of
if
course.
They don't say what I want them to, of right? Course, so of it's course. Being open no to should. Accept the answer, even if it's not an answer, is, I guess, where I'm going with
sure,
this.
Sure, 100%.
Yeah, I think the mystery there, you know, it's like any relationship, right? Like, you don't, if we knew everything about what everybody thought about everything, the shit would be boring.
Oh, my God. That's the worst world. Yeah, totally. Right? That's why, like, what would you want your superpower to be? Like, reading people's thoughts would be the worst. No.
That's the worst. I don't want to read people's thoughts. Totally. Right.
No. I just want to fly away from them. I don't want to know what anyone thinks.
I want to transport, that's all.
Totally. I barely want to know what they say.
Totally. I don't care, let alone want to know. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so it's one of the, and that's a very interesting point you brought up, bringing it back to the Vic Spencer and the relationship between fan and artist. The internet has flattened things to such a wild degree, and I think this is true of sports if we're talking about bad fans, that people feel a level of access that they don't actually have,
right,
and they're not actually entitled to.
Yes.
So it's this weird moment where people feel so connected to the artists that they love or the athletes that they love that they feel like they can say things. I'm like, how are you adding a person and saying this? Like, this is not
the term that kind of defines that is people get a kind of sense of like familiarity.
Right. Don't get familiar.
Like, don't get familiar. Like, you don't know me. Like, you might have followed me for years and like think you know. It's a one way relationship.
Exactly.
Like, they don't know you.
Right. Right.
And like another funny term that has been on Twitter, and I really try not to be like this, though at times I can't help myself, is don't be a reply guy. Like, especially like a lot of like comedians, and especially like female comedians that I follow, like there's people who always try to like one up the joke
right,
or explain their joke back to them, and it's like that's being a bad fan.
Don't step on the punchline.
Just take it and go.
They have this little button with the heart that you can show them you appreciate the joke.
Right.
Don't be a reply guy.
Totally.
Damn.
Totally.
Unless you're hitting us up on Twitter. Dad by Rat Pod.
I still fuck with you, but
we fuck with reply guys.
Yeah.
So I think that's very interesting, but just on the kind of to get to a kind of place of summary on the lyric thing, I love it, but it's not necessary, right? And there's not, besides Genius, there's not like much of a repository as physical throw-ins and like lyric sheets kind of aren't a part of it anymore. I don't find myself missing it. I also don't have time to read lyrics.
But also it's there for to be a resource. You know what I mean?
I think on some level, yes, having a central place for all of that, that's where the internet's at its best, right?
Right.
The aggregation of information.
Genius exists because there was a need for it.
There's a hunger for that information and to be able to go somewhere. Because when I was doing hip hop after school programs and trying to teach eighth graders to rap, which is impossible actually.
Oh.
I would go and try to print out lyrics, and this was kind of pre-Rap Genius. But that shit was just wild sketchy. Like, if you think Rap Genius is bad.
Oh, totally.
You're before on some GeoCities website Beastie Boys lyrics from, like, 98. Like,
no, totally. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. It was super
bad. I want to bring this up. I feel like I may have talked about this on the podcast before, but one of the first things that I found on the internet that, like, proved the internet was useful to me was some guy, I'm assuming it was a guy, it could have been a lady, probably not when you hear what it is, went through and annotated every single sample and reference in Paul's Boutique.
Whoa.
Did you guys ever come across that in your early internet travels?
Jeez.
I wish such a thing still existed, and it was kind of getting at what Genius is now, but it like went way further.
Kay.
So it's like, you know, I think this is on Paul's Boutique. I might be fucking up the chronology, but it's like, I got more hits than Sadahara O.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you...
Now,
hover over, and actually probably at that time you had to click and go to a different page, and they're like, Sadahara O is a Japanese baseball player.
No, I remember literally finding out who he was and going, oh, that's who they're talking about. Like, back in the day, that's all you had. I was thinking about this in terms of Fife. Fife had a series of lines that literally took me 20 years to catch up.
Same.
Until the documentary came out when he was like, let me save the little man from inside the boat. clitoris. Didn't understand that that was a euphemism. Busts off on your couch. Now you got Siemens furniture. I thought he literally just meant, I didn't get the double entendre piece of it. And so that's how kind of how it was. Like, you just had to kind of figure shit
out.
And
that's dope. And I don't want to go to a website and be like, this is a couch brand and also what semen is called. You know what I mean?
But
it's
I also don't want to take 25 years to understand a rap lyric, though.
Yeah. I was just saying that shit. Before I actually found the clitoris, I was just saying Fife Dog's rendition of it.
But I hear you. I hear you. You don't want it to make it, like, I don't know, feeding candy, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Spoon-fed.
Yeah. You know? And then to get back to Vic Spencer's kind of point, that kind of ease of access is something that he's actually trying to flip. He's like, you got to work a little bit to get this. Now, you'll get a bigger interaction from me, but you have to kind of put in the time and effort too as a fan.
Yes.
Which I thought was amazing.
It's the Nipsey Hussle, kind of popularized proud to pay model.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually saw one of our buddies, Ray Resurrection, using that exact phrase for his record. He's going
to
put it out on streaming next week, or it's probably out by now. Bricktop Jimmy by Ray Resurrection.
Yep.
Shout out to the homie.
Ray.
And he's like, but if you're fucking with me, you'll get it early. You'll get a couple extra things, and it's only $8. Like, it's like, I thought it was cool the way he did it, and I like that. And you kind of see where you stand, right?
Right.
Like,
right,
we're all
right.
looking for data.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's like, if we started a Patreon, maybe 5 people would fuck with it.
Totally,
you know what
totally.
I mean? It's like, but out of the hundreds who listen, you as you ask things from them, you winnow down the number
100%.
Of people who really. Like, really fuck with you
that?
Like,
to
put money
out
of your pocket? 100%. I like a lot of things. I don't do any Patreons.
Totally.
It's not a thing.
Well,
I've
mean, like, Bandcamp is that.
Do.
Bandcamp is that, and
totally.
It just sits there.
Totally.
You know, it's like, I listen to every Bandcamp song. I've never paid anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
You bastard. Fucking buy something. Golly. I have like, 4, maybe 5 Bandcamp artists that I fuck with on that kind of premise of, like, you know, your shit is here. It's fringe enough to where I'm like, my $7 means something.
Yes. Totally,
to what,
totally,
to
totally,
what you're
totally,
doing,
totally,
right?
Totally.
I'm
proud to pay for records. I buy records.
Yeah.
If you got vinyl, I'll pay
totally.
way more than $7
right.
in some cases.
Right.
You're
to support
a fossil
like
fuel guy. I get
in
it.
A way.
I get it.
Yeah, single-use plastic, man.
That's right. That's right. But it lives forever.
Yeah,
fucking
yeah.
vinyl lives forever.
Yeah, you pay for the first listen. After that, it's free.
That's a good way of putting it.
That should be a bumper sticker, Dave.
That's
so in summary, rap genius, maybe not a genius, but...
just one last thing I know we're trying to summarize. It's in a way, because it's like venture funded and it's kind of like, it just feels white. I don't know if the people who started are actually white.
Yeah.
It feels very white. The way it's laid out and what they called it, that's just some white shit.
No, it doesn't feel Mexican.
I know it when I see it.
It feels white. Right? There's certain feelings.
It's like how the guy who founded Spotify is going to be a billionaire, but all the artists on Spotify make like 10 cents
exactly.
or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly.
Rap Genius has a little air of that like entitlement kind of thing. It's like, oh, now my art makes you millions.
Yeah.
Right.
And so
right.
that's why I think that's part of the reason why people
the colonial aspect of
yeah.
it.
The colonial aspect
yeah.
of it. There's
yeah.
no like Tidal version of
Rap Genius.
Rap Genius,
right.
except for I think Tidal for their core artists like your Jay-Z's and whatnot.
They will put the lyrics.
They put the lyrics,
yeah.
right? So
yeah.
that's a kind of a workaround on that. And to keep it within the artists and to do the better rates and stuff like that really does have meaning.
Right. No. And it's time for us to decolonize our lyrics, our lyric aggregation. sorry, that was just laying there. Definitely.
On the Siemens furniture.
Oh, man.
Can I do the segue?
Go ahead. Alley-oop to you, Nate. Segue.
Just because you were
I wasn't here.
Another engagement when you did it. So we're going to shift gears. We have an interview with Brian of Rap Zines, who actually this kind of ties in. That was not accidental. He is one of the foremost collectors of rap magazines in the world, and his archive, which resides just down the road a little bit in Salinas, California, is an extensive source of hip hop information. And like, he's a super cool cat. We really enjoyed talking to him. So this is our interview with Brian from Rap Zines. We'll be right back. Dad Bod Rap Pod. Always bringing you the best guests. This is a cat that we connected with on Instagram because he has an insane collection of hip-hop related magazines and ephemera. Want to welcome to the show Brian from Rap Zines. How you doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
Excellent. Thank you for being on the show. I have to say, Instagram is like, we for like a year we didn't have an Instagram because we stupidly thought there was no good way to represent the show and its ethos like visually, but it turns out we're just idiots. That's where everyone is who like cares about hip hop. So we've like found this like community, including interacting with cats like you, and your kind of collection and your kind of niche is super suited for that square format. So you have a really awesome account. Everyone should follow at Rap Zines, but can you just kind of tell us how you got started collecting rap magazines and a little bit about like what you're, what kind of what you get out of it?
Yeah, you know, I was a teenager, you know, growing up, I started listening to hip hop, and it really morphed into something more than it was going to be, because it was just, that was my internet, you know, back in the days before we even had the internet.
For sure.
You wanted to hear, check out the new albums or something like that, or what was coming out, what your favorite artist was doing. You know, that was pretty much the way you would go about finding out information. And, you know, I still like to buy a lot of cassette tapes and records and CDs. And so that was kind of something that I used for that. But at the same time, I'm a real visual person, so I love the covers and the artwork and the photography that was done in it. So it pretty much just started that way. And, you know, I used to really respect the magazines because I go back and look at them. So I made sure that I took care of them. And then after a little while, you know, it was because most of the magazines were based in New York that I used to get at first. And then stuff like Double XL and then, you know, 4080, Murder Dog, there's stuff out on the West Coast, Rap Pages, all that stuff. I just started wanting more information. It was just a matter of, you know, just wanting to know more. So I just kept all of it. And I, you know, I used to go back and reference some of it and look for things that I might have missed or something I wanted. And it just became a passion of mine because I really enjoyed, like I said, the artwork too of the covers and having some of my favorite artists. And then after that, it became kind of an obsession for a little while. So, yeah, you know, I started.
I'm a record collector. I'm very familiar with that itch.
Yeah.
There was a time in my life where it was right, never enough. Like,
yeah. Like, why am I getting this? Because it's just, you know, you have a passion for it or it's something that you really, you know, it's something you enjoy. So that was the same thing with me. And for the longest time, I actually thought, you know, it was weird, you know, that I was the only one out there kind of doing this kind of thing. And so, but I enjoyed it, so I didn't really care what anybody thought. So,
is there a broader, like, magazine collecting world that we don't know about that you're a part of? Is there people who, like, collect, like, New Yorkers and interview magazines and stuff like that? Or is it pretty much just, like, a hip-hop thing for you?
You know, there's magazine collectors in general, and then there's people who are, you know, specifically want a certain artist. There's collectors who collect... I know one guy who collects nothing but hip-hop magazines from 1996. I guess that's his key year.
Wow.
It goes down all the way from, you know, but
he's got as that far as, like, mentality.
For me, yeah, you know? And so it's really interesting because right now people are starting to look at these magazines and the articles that are inside as more of artifacts and stuff that they want to dig deeper into it because, you know, a lot of this stuff you can't get anywhere anymore. Mm. You know, a lot of even if you look online, a lot of the internet stuff, it's just regurgitated information that's going back and forth through right. there. So now they're trying to get a deeper insight into the story. And once you, if you cut out the internet, when the internet was born, everything before that is in these pages. A lot of it is in these pages. That's a part of it, not the whole story, but there's a lot of interesting stuff in there, photos and interviews that people had, and people are starting to barely go back and use it for research too. So it's taken on a kind of a different collection. Now I kind of call it the archive because, you know, people come and ask about it, or when they're doing research on something, you know, I get a lot of people hit me up that they're looking for a specific, you know, article on Nas or something, you know, so Right on. It kind of morphed into that, but it, at the time, like I said, going off track, but that whole collecting it, it just became a passion of mine. And then, you know, there was more magazines coming out, and then down south started getting hot, so there was a lot of stuff coming from down south. And so I just took it head on and just looked everywhere. I was driving through everywhere on the West Coast with a Craigslist, you know. Wow. Meeting up with shady people just for a box of magazines, not knowing if it was my last time I was gonna grab some magazines. You know, eBay started popping up. You know how that whole everything morphs like that. Sure. And
hey, Brian,
I just kept at it.
Hey, Brian, how many pieces of memorabilia would you say you own?
As far as magazines, I have 3,400. Magazines already like cataloged.
Wow.
And that's not including duplicates, of course, because if you count duplicates, I probably have about another 3/4 of that in duplicates. Wow. But you know, I mean, wow.
Just from buying collections, you can't really have end up with the same issues over and over.
Yeah, especially if you buy in bulk. You know, if somebody has a collection, you don't just pick through them. I'm just like, I'll take them all, just bring them all on. Yeah. So a lot of times I ended up with, like, you know, I got like maybe 10 copies of 50 Cent on the cover of Double XL or something like that, you know? So, you know, it goes along with it like that. But that's the magazine part. I just actually this year finished cataloging that part of it. So I'm at about 3,400 right now. And then I'm just looking at the records and the tapes and the CDs and all the, like, actual, like, shirts and anything, promo items and all that. I don't even know how to even start with that stuff right now. So I'm just taking it day by day, you know.
Right on.
So I really don't have a count.
Piece that you have, or oldest magazine that you have?
Ooh, as far as magazines, I think I have some late 70s, early 80s newspaper type magazines. And they're actually, it's funny because I'm trying to think which one it is right now, but I know Grandmaster Flash is on the cover with Blondie.
Oh, wow.
Oh, cool.
And, like, or what's her, like, not that. Blondie, but yeah, it was a UK magazine.
Oh,
Debbie
wow.
Harry, yeah.
Wow.
They're always cool.
And
it's
on. Yeah, I think it's from a UK based rock magazine.
Oh, cool.
That had him on the cover. But a lot of it, you know, stretches. I got a lot of early 80s stuff. I got one of my favorite magazines, which was called Focus Magazine, and it had Kumo D and LL Cool J stepping over buildings like they're ready for war.
That's awesome.
You know, stuff like that from the early 80s, stuff like that. But as far as the oldest, probably somewhere around there. I couldn't make an exact count, but I think it was that UK magazine with
cool.
Grandmaster Flash.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Do some of these trade for big bucks?
You know, they really do. Mm. I've never, like I said, it was never something to do for profit. So I really, even when I sell something, it's like I put a price on what it means to me instead of what the market is as much.
Yeah.
But sometimes I have to give something away, because I had a guy in, I want to say he was from somewhere in the Middle East, and he contacted me on my site, and I was able to purchase Death Row when they went bankrupt, their magazine collection that was in the offices in there.
Wow.
And one of them had an early, a lot of people call it the Holy Grail, but I mean, you know, it's debatable for people that are into, like, Death Row, but it has a picture of Dr. Dre and Suge Knight on the cover, and it has, like, weird logos that when Death Row was still trying to, like, figure out what their logo was.
Wow.
And it's really hard because it's an independent, it's called Brie Magazine, and it's more for, like, industry insiders.
Okay.
So it was never out on the newsstands. It was more for, you know, it had all the top plays for the radio, and, you know, it was for people that were within the business just so they can look through it and see, you know, what was coming out.
Yeah, a trade publication.
Yeah. And so that one, you know, he reached out to me on my website, and he was like, would you like to sell that magazine? I was like, not really. And I had a duplicate. I had a duplicate of it, but he said, I said, if you give me a crazy number, I might. And he dropped out 1500, and I was like, okay, deal. All right. And I shipped it off the next day because, you know, $1,500. Exactly. I was already mailing it before I even got paid yet. But, you know, so it's like something like that. I mean, there, if people really want something, I mean, and it's hard to find.
Yeah.
I understand it, you know.
Sure.
I've started to see it a lot now, but at the same time, like, I'm not really into that part of it. I'll sell stuff on my website, but like I said, the prices on there are, if you really want it that bad, or, you know, to put, make me go dig for it and ship it to you, this is what it feels like for me.
Sure.
But it's not as far as, you know, I've heard people pay some ridiculous numbers. A lot of people look for a lot of Tupac stuff from me.
Interesting.
I still, yeah, there's a, especially for some of the older stuff too, not just that stuff, but, you know, it's starting to become harder and harder to find some of this stuff. Even for some publications that were out, like I said, Rap Pages are starting to become really hard to find, and everybody wants the old Word Up magazines because of the beautiful fold-out posters that were inside, and all the, I mean, it was all color, you know, most of Word Up had a lot of color. Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly. So that gives it a little push too, but even those things, I mean, it's not a lot of money, but like, those things sell sometimes for like $50 to $150 a piece, depending on what issue.
Wow. So, Brian, are there particular pieces in your collection that are your most prized ones? And which ones are those?
You know what? I do. I have, and most of them are, like, for me, I guess as a collector of these, I mean, some of those things that make it for me is, it has to have a beautiful cover, number one. It has to be something that has a story behind it. Either it was really hard for me to find, or I've never seen it somewhere else. And the content inside is like, you know, there's some weird content inside. It takes a couple of things like that for me to really, really figure out like which ones are my favorites. And a lot of times when I think about it, they come down to, I have a magazine called Hits Magazine, which is another industry insider magazine. And it has Snoop on the cover, and I think I posted it to Instagram. Actually, I'm pretty sure I did, because I framed it. I finally framed it because I said, this is one of my favorites. Mm. And it's just him sitting on a stool, all blued out with a blue background. And the Hits Magazine is a really hard one to find, too. And there's actually some tidbits inside that magazine about Snoop that, you know, just talking to him directly, that was kind of cool. So, like, something like that is a really one of my favorites. And then anything with Public Enemy on the cover, you know, in the scene where they're in the jail cell, mm-hmm. or it takes a nation. No, is it takes? Yeah, it takes a nation of millions.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That one. I love those photos right there, and I think that was Glenn Friedman who took those photos, mm-hmm. and he took a lot of shots from within there. So you see a lot of different pics from that one day. So
that's cool.
Those are some of my favorite right there. And then I have a couple of rare ones, some Bay Area magazines. I have a Murder Dog magazine with D40 on the cover, which is like a really rare one to find. And he actually is brandishing a pistol on that one.
Oh, wow.
And it's an oversized one, and it's in like almost like, you know, the newspaper format, the kind of bigger ones that they used to have.
Yeah, tabloid.
Before they got all shiny and glossy, before they got all P. Diddy on us. You know, so we had that one is one of my favorites too. And I mean, I could go down the list. I have an Eagle Trip with Smith and Wesson on the cover, that just incredible picture. They use some kind of filtering to make it look like a yellow day. Mm. And they're just sitting on some steps by a building. And it's just, the whole picture of it is incredible. Plus, it's an Ego Trip. And Ego Trip is one of my favorite magazines, too. So,
absolutely. The gold standard.
We could sit here for another hour, and I can tell you all my favorite magazines. But they're all like my children. It's hard to pick which one. But
that's awesome, man. We can,
I mean,
like,
I got something
passion.
Like that. Yeah, for sure.
So
for sure.
When we were kind of setting up the interview, I asked you to think about a couple of facts that are like, you were able to glean from your collection that are not like well known or like Wikipedia-able. Like, what are some insights that you've gained from reading the magazine beyond like just collecting?
You know, I was thinking about that too, and I was thinking the first things that came to my mind, and they come in different there's different information in there that is not online that you look at. And one of them was just actually a specific interview with somebody, because sometimes they say stuff in there and you get a better sense of what they were thinking at that time.
Sure.
In their career. And I was looking at one that really caught my attention, that I've always thought about that one. And it was called Club Magazine. And that was out of the Bay Area too. And it was just, I don't even know how many are out there. I rarely see those either. And I think it was from 92. No, it was from 93, somewhere around 93. And they had an interview with Boots Riley.
Okay.
From The Coup. And he's talking about, and I actually cross-referenced it with Google. I just went on Google and I was checking it. And, you know, they talk about when the group formed, and they're pretty vague, you know, when the group was formed, and they go through little things about all the different things that they did. But when you read that article inside the club, he starts talking and going in depth about how he used to work at the UPS with E-Rock, and even the time frame that he's talking about kind of shows that they really formed closer to 90 than what Google tells you, I think 92.
Okay.
And that's like really... That's really tight, like nerdy stuff to, like, you know, it's just, oh yeah, it's just a little fraction in there, but
matters to me, man. That's what we're here for.
No, it really does, because what happens is I've noticed a lot of people, what they do is they just regurgitate that Google information instead of going back and studying when was the exact days, you know.
Unless I don't know if you saw it, but the journalist Dart Adams published a big piece on DJ Booth about this. I think it was last week, or it might be a couple weeks ago by the time this airs. About how it's not that hard to actually research if you have a few skills, like an access to the library, and you know, it's like, it's not that hard to just get it right.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I see it all the time. I see discrepancies when I'm watching something and I'm like, I don't think that's true right there. And I'll go back and look at something, but you know, it's things like that, even though it's not like a huge deal to a lot of people. And actually one of the guys I was talking to, I don't know if you know, Joseph Patel, but he did some stuff in the Bay Area. But he was the same thing. He was telling me about my collection is that a lot of that stuff that like is very important, but at the same time he's not sure if it's more of a nerdy thing to find facts like that, or if that's like a big deal to people.
I think correcting it and using primary sources from the artist's mouth is important, and like, I don't know. It does matter. I'm not going to like spend all my time researching minutia. There's like macro trends and like kind of like subtext that's important as well. But I think if we are trying to like be good stewards of the culture, we should try to get the facts right.
Right. For sure. You know, and another one that I was thinking about is there's a magazine out of the Bay called the Yay. And as you can tell, a lot of my magazine collection, because I'm here in Salinas, a lot of it, is West Coast based, but I have huge amounts of East Coast stuff. It's just, it's easier for me to get here. So
sure.
I get a lot of those independent magazines that are coming out of the Bay Area. And there was one called the Yay that came out in the early 2000s. And it's funny because this kind of is the thing that caught my attention, is that there was a guy in there and he wrote an article, and he wrote it just like we're talking right now. He didn't filter anything. Spell check the thing, but he just basically went through it, and the whole story he told in about maybe three paragraphs was how Too Short and Two Live Crew had a concert in Sacramento at this place apparently called the Colonial.
Okay.
I don't know where that is, but he said that they canceled. So the whole story is because he was there, was talking about how NorCal Underground, which was the people putting it on the show on, and how they didn't show up, and what was happening there, and how they had these girls up on stage. And so the story he's telling in there about what happened, I've never known about it. And obviously it's just a small little tiny tidbit of information, but I'm sure if nobody read that piece of article that was inside that Yay magazine, that nobody really would ever document that, or it would be lost in history of hip hop.
Right.
You know, and so I think about little things like that, because that's one of the things that switched my brain to preserving now, mm-hmm. is because every day we're losing parts of history that people are not going to tell the story, or it's not going to continue on.
Totally.
You know
right.
what I mean? So we lose even that, even though somebody, you never know, there might be somebody that wants to know something about Two Live Crew and their tours and stuff like that, or Too Short, or I'm sorry, yeah, for Too Short. But, you know, that little tidbit of what was happening at that place when he goes into who showed up, what was happening in there, all that little tiny part of that history will be gone forever.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And it doesn't seem like much, but every day we're losing stuff like that. Every single day we're losing a totally. Part of that history.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I just had one thing I wanted to kind of wrap up with. I believe, and please correct me if I'm wrong on any of the facts here, like we were just saying, you were able to lend part of your archive to the Annenberg Center as part of an exhibit they're doing. Can you kind of tell me a little bit about that and kind of how that came to be and all that stuff?
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, it's a long trail of people, but maybe, you know, and going back to what I said about my collecting, it was something that I had kept secret to myself, like all my collection. And at one point when I made my website, it was more of, why am I hoarding this information or these pictures? So I made my website. That's what it was originally for. So once it was up, I started getting people contacting me, and they actually were doing a documentary in New York. The girl that was doing the documentary, Sarita Gate, she came down, flew in from New York, and did a documentary.
Wow.
She introduced me to another gentleman who was involved with the universities up there, because I told them I might be interested in giving it to a university that will use it for research. But right. they have to use it for research, not just to, I don't want to give it to somebody to purchase. It needs right. to be used for research. So from that point on, they connected me because Vicky was looking for these articles and these photos and stuff. Vicky Toback, who did the Contact High book, which was featured at Annenberg, she reached out to me. She's like, do you have this and that? And I go, yeah, I got three or four of them. And so we went through my collection, the ones that they were going to use for the gallery over there, and I shipped them off. And they took the Biggie Rap Pages magazine, the iconic one where he's wearing the crown on his head.
For sure.
They took the Goody Mob that's over there posted. There's the Double XL, Great Day in Hip Hop History.
Yeah.
The Greatest Day, the one that folds out. That one's out there. They had a few others, but I'm not sure if they're going to use them. But that's what happened. And it was beautiful, man. If you haven't been down to LA to see that, it's really beautiful just to see the artwork. And some of those photographers, like you said, they were showing their contact sheets. So
right.
you see a lot of photos that people have never seen. You know, everybody's talking about the Biggie one because on the outtakes of it, he's smiling on one, he's acting a fool on another one, you know, so it's really interesting to see stuff like that. And they had all these different photos going on in there. That's how it got involved in it. That's where it is right now. All my little babies are over there.
That's cool, man. Give the people you're at on Instagram and your website one time, just so they know how to find you and get in touch about all of this magazine related, if kind of like scholarly kind of take on the collecting game.
Yeah, for sure. Rap Zines. It's on rapzines.com, and my Instagram is at rapzines. And I also, before we wrap up, I want to give a shout out to whoever, put on that George Costanza little skit at the end of one of your podcasts. Right there. I was hoping I could get it on a mixtape or something.
That's
like that.
That's awesome. That I'm so glad. I was just telling the guys, I'm like, I don't think anybody caught that. Like, does anybody really listen to the end? That was the producer Obliv, because oftentimes when we call people, they don't pick up on the first time because it's an unfamiliar number, or because, like, who in God's name wants to talk on the phone these days?
right.
we happened to catch that while the tape was running, so to speak, and I just tacked it on at the end as a little bonus. So thank you for noticing my little nerdy producer moment.
Yeah, for sure. And I appreciate you guys, man. Like I said, next time you guys need to come down, because, like I said, a lot of it is visual. You guys need to come down. Hey, you guys are always welcome to come to my place. And,
I appreciate that, Brian. Appreciate thank that, you.
I'm sure you guys will have fun just looking through everything.
Yeah, dude, that sounds awesome. We'll set something up. Appreciate your time. Everybody check out Rap Zines. And Brian, you have a good night.
Hey, you too.
Dead Bod Rap Pod. That was our interview with Brian from Rap Zines. To be the foremost collector, I think is pretty fucking incredible, especially now that the Rap Magazine is dead.
Totally. And some of the stuff that he talked about that he owns is ridiculous. I mean, you talk about
super cool, man.
It's like he owns the Honus Wagner of Rap Zines.
And
it's totally crazy.
And hopefully he doesn't fucking have to end up selling that shit to the Smithsonian. Like, I am here for the decolonization of rap artifacts. Like, fuck every college that's like, oh, I'm buying Ben Bada's whole fucking record collection. I'm getting all the flyers. Like,
I don't agree with anything you're saying.
Thank you, Collegiate
Mate. I happen to have some insight onto this because of the Cut Chemist interview, which will someday see the light of day, that I'm working on. He got access to that those archives. And the guy, Johan Kuckelberg is his name, who arranges the sale of these
archives
to these universities. Like, one has a fucking dope life and has like found this niche in between academia and art that is monetizing things for the artists that would otherwise like sit in storage lockers, dude.
Right.
Like, it's kind of their last big payday,
which is unfortunate that we have to sell out, that our favorite artists have to sell off the cultural artifacts to institutions who will put them under glass like a dead butterfly.
They didn't put them under glass. They literally let Shadow and Cut Chemist go and take them around the world. And like, you and I could go and get permission to go look at Afrika Bambaataa's fucking spacesuits. He's a bad example because we all know what happened with him, but it just happens to be the one I've talked to someone who was involved with it about. I think it's less under glass than you think if you put a little effort into going and, like, libraries are not glass. They're active institutions that you can go and interact with at any time you want.
When you have something up in Stanford, that is actually not true. After working with Adisa Obanjoko, who was on the program, who did a hip-hop exhibit up in Oakland. No, you actually have to work to get permission. And they actually don't give it to everybody because they're like, no, these are ours. So if there's a benefit, if you have some juice, you, Nate LeBlanc, go try to listen to the Black Panther records that they have tucked away at Stanford and see how far you get. You know what I mean? That's academia. This is a wild, deep subject for our outro.
I hate that word.
Yeah.
What is this, a Gwyneth outro?
No.
but we're consciously
uncoupling with this subject right now because it's too complicated for an outro. But we should continue this debate some other time.
Absolutely. Argyle Nate versus.
I don't think you're giving enough credit to the fact that the artists don't want the shit sitting around. They need something to do with it.
Okay. Like, I mean,
most artists don't own copies of their own records.
Right. Which is sad on a whole nother level.
They made choices. You can sell it for $30 when it first comes out, or sell it for $300 after it becomes rare, or you can keep it. Keep it for what?
Well, I mean, if you have, let's put it this way. Prince is not offering up his shit. He had all of his shit, but he was successful enough as an artist to be able to. I think what you're talking about is like, yeah, once our heroes hit Palookaville, and they need the bread, yeah, of course they're going to sell to the Smithsonian. I get it, but that is kind of, that's two sad stories that are coupled that I'm not quite comfortable with.
I think they can be very cool stories that end up benefiting everyone, but it doesn't matter. For
that
now,
was rosy.
We will have to debate.
Welcome
this
to our last
time.
Episode of yeah. Dad Bod Rap Pod.
If I can survive shitting on some rap songs, I will be here forever. And that is my new mantra. So Dad Bod Rap Pod, if you want to continue to hear us argue week after week, check us out on where all the fly fucking podcasts are at. We're there. Like, rate, subscribe, argue back with us on Twitter, at Dad Bod Rap Pod. Check us out on Instagram, at Dad Bod Rap Pod, also on Facebook. And we have a Spotify channel too that has actually
some playlists,
a growing
collection
of playlists that you can check out.
If you want to hear 10 songs of someone we talk to, there's a chance that it's on there.
Yeah, yeah. So
maybe over the Christmas break, if we do a Christmas break this year, I'll go back and do some old episode ones.
Will you?
Yeah.
Playlist for old episodes.
Yeah, playlist for old episodes.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Do a gift of gab.
We should.
Something like that.
Yeah, we should. JJ Fad's top 30 songs.
the anthology.
The anthology. So, yeah. So we appreciate everybody tuning in, talking back, hitting us up to correct us, offering feedback. It lets us know that people are listening, and we genuinely appreciate that shit. And, yeah, stay wavy. We are the Dad Bod Rap Pod. You make me feel.